It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Last Thursday, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued guidance urging Americans not to travel for the Thanksgiving holiday because COVID cases are soaring across the country. Despite that, more than 1 million people flew last Friday. That's according to the Transportation Security Administration. So how busy is Pittsburgh International Airport? What health precautions are being taken for travelers? Allegheny County Airport Authority CEO Christina Kasotis joins us now. Welcome back to the Confluence.
Thanks, Kevin. Nice to be here.
So how busy was Pittsburgh International last Friday, which for some was the start of the travel for the holiday?
Yeah, we were seeing the same travel patterns that we had been seeing for much of October and into November, which is about 5,000 people a day. That's down 66% from a normal Friday before Thanksgiving. So we are still seeing dramatically lower numbers of people traveling.
Mm-hmm. That 1 million that I mentioned, that was about 40% of the normal of the Friday before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. What are you expecting for today, the day before Thanksgiving, usually one of the most heavily traveled days?
I expect that we'll see a slight uptick. We have been seeing numbers creeping towards 6,000 again on days that we would have expected, 17,000.
Mm-hmm. So slightly more passengers mm-hmm. for the holiday than have been going through the airport mm-hmm. The last 7 months. So what are you doing to make sure it's safe for them?
We're doing everything we can. We're making sure that people understand through our PIT Safe Travels initiative. We have facial coverings required throughout the airport property. We have a lot of reminders about social distancing. We've gone through and done a number of things to make sure that we are enhancing our cleaning and disinfecting. We've got our UV robots in partnership with Carnegie Robotics out there that are taking care of all of our floor surfaces. Protective shields are up. We've reconfigured seating in the hold rooms and in the food court area. And we are starting to incorporate more and more in the touchless transactions technology for staff as well as for passengers.
Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania Secretary of Health, Dr. Rachel Levine, is ordering that anyone coming in from outside the state get a negative COVID test at least 72 hours prior or quarantine for 14 days when they arrive. She said there wouldn't be any checkpoints or anything at airports, but is there anything that you're doing to help comply with this order, considering you are the largest airport in our region?
We're making sure that our teams understand that rule. So for anybody on our team who's traveling, they understand that they have to come back with that negative COVID test within 72 hours of returning to the state. But as far as passengers go, no, we are not enforcing that. We haven't been asked to.
So you haven't been asked to. Any signage, any information that you distribute to sort of remind people who are coming into the state, this is what we would really like you to do.
It's the state's mandate. We are making sure that we are making that information available to people who are calling and asking anything about the order from our info desks. It's messaging that we had to create, frankly. So we're doing our best with these orders that tend to come with very little notice. So, we're catching up like everybody else.
So there's a cut in your budget. It'll total about $110 million in 2021, about 4%. Less than what you had for this fiscal year. What does this mean for what you can do at the airport?
It means that we are, first of all, that we are making sure that all of the essential services that we provide will continue to get provided, right? So we are part of national critical infrastructure. We have to be open 24/7, 365, and we want to make sure that we are here for the cargo flights, for the military, for passengers who have to travel, and for staff that has to work here, that we're doing everything we can to make sure that we're healthy and safe. So all of that continues. What we want to make sure of also is that we're being as fiscally responsible as possible so that we can, be mindful of the operating environment. The airlines are the ones who backstop our budget, and we want to make sure that we're being good partners and doing the right thing in terms of putting off any and all expenses that can be put off. Some things are easy, like, unfortunately for us, travel, conferences, you know, and the like. And there are some capital programs that we have delayed, like the Terminal Modernization Program and others. But everything that is critical is getting done.
Mm-hmm. The CARES Act funding that you receive requires you to keep it was 90% of your staff on payroll through the end of this calendar year. Do you have a sense if you'll need to do any layoffs after the first?
I don't expect to. I believe that the team that we have is the team that we need to take us through operating this facility fully and safely, and that if we were to go down any further in staff, we would be cutting into muscle, as they say. So we're really hopeful that because we've been so financially responsible, we paid off our debt last year. We have really done a lot to conserve cash. We are really hopeful that this is the team that will take us through.
Mm-hmm. You said the last time we spoke that the CARES Act funding was crucial to helping the airport close some funding gaps. New administration coming in, but no change at this time in Congress. What will happen? Well, how important is more stimulus money to the airport?
I would say that, you know, further stimulus for the industry is important because it helps us all be able to make the kinds of capital investments that are important, puts people back to work. Anything that we can do to keep people in this region working, I think, is going to be helpful. And to the extent that more is being considered, we would absolutely expect that airports would be part of that conversation, mm-hmm. as would airlines.
Are you banking on that, or would that just be a little bonus that falls your way?
Listen, I am not banking on anything these days. We take it day by day, you know, and we try to balance our day by day focus with having a line of sight into the future and making sure that we're preparing for when this is over.
Allegheny County Airport Authority CEO Christina Cassotis, thanks so much.
Thank you, Kevin. Always a pleasure.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Lines wrapping around buildings, people rushing through a retailer's doors to snag the items on their holiday shopping list. Maybe someone getting hurt in the chaos. Black Friday, like it or not, this holiday shopping experience marks the beginning of a shopping week. Cyber Monday, Small Business Saturday, Giving Tuesday. Well, this year, the holiday shopping experience might involve smaller crowds and more pickups. Audrey Guskey is an associate professor of marketing at Duquesne University and a consumer trends expert. Audrey, good to talk to you.
Great to be with you. Thank you, Kevin.
Audrey, briefly, how did Black Friday become an event, a ritual for some people?
Well, believe it or not, I don't think most people will believe this, Black Friday started in the mid-1960s in Philadelphia around the Army-Navy game. So what happened is people were there for the game from all over the country. And so the game was on Saturday. They decided to shop on Friday. It literally got out of hand. A lot of shoplifting. The police had to come in to break up the fights. So that's really why it's Black Friday.
So how did things sort of spread out to that, shall we say, that day after Thanksgiving, that one day to several days, including Small Business Saturday and Cyber Monday? When did they come into the picture?
Well, marketers are very clever people, and they realize that if people are going to go crazy and shop on Black Friday, let's spread it out a little bit. So Small Business Saturday, that's an interesting story because that started out with American Express. It was in 2010. They encouraged people to shop, you know, locally because 67 cents of every dollar that's spent in the small businesses tend to stay in the community. And so they worked that up to nearly $18 billion, which is a very nice chunk of change. So, you know, various marketers, retailers were trying to just get more people to be shopping. And then Thanksgiving, we started opening stores on Thanksgiving. A lot of backlash about that. And now very, very few stores. The only one I know of is Big Lots is going to be open this Thanksgiving Day.
We were talking a little bit about Small Business Saturday. How can those businesses sort of take advantage of maybe if there's any hesitation, reluctance, or saying, you know, I just don't want to go to that big box store. I want to go to the little entrepreneur.
Yeah, the small businesses have a huge advantage in that it's more personalized, smaller, a safer experience. And so they have that advantage. And also, they've taken the big hit when it comes to the pandemic. And I think most people in their hearts feel, you know, if I'm going to be spending some money for Christmas, I'm going to spend more of it this year on small businesses in my community, because you just want to help them out.
Whether shoppers want to show up for Black Friday or not, occupancy limits due to the pandemic will limit that crush of people in stores. So give me an idea. How do you think Black Friday will look different this year?
Yeah, that's a very good question. This number of shoppers in each store will be limited. Some of the stores are saying they may have a lottery or something where you get a certain time, you register. The in-store sales, the doorbusters won't be as big because retailers, believe it or not, aren't trying to encourage as many shoppers in the store. I think the hours will be limited as well. So I think there'll still be a lot of shoppers, but it won't be, you know how you and I have been covering this for I hate to say decades.
That's
as
true.
Far as the frenzy for Black Friday. And this year, I don't think we're going to be experiencing that at all. And retailers, as we had said, Kevin, earlier, they've been spreading out the Black Friday fun for many, many years. So the magic, the luster, the sparkle of Black Friday hasn't been there in a while. And with the pandemic, it sort of put the nail in the coffin. And interestingly, it'll be strange this year, but I'm wondering in 2021 if we're even going to have a Black Friday anymore. Mm.
You think it'll be gone?
It's going to fizzle up, perhaps. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. Audrey, with many people not gathering for the holidays and plus unemployment still high, so what's your forecast for retailers this holiday season?
Yeah. As you know, I've been predicting Christmas retail sales for, I hate to say this, but 30 years or more. And this year has been an interesting year to predict because nobody really knows. But I am thinking that sales are going to be flat this year as compared to 2019. In other words, they'll be the same. We'll spend about the same amount that we did last year. And typically, that's bad news for retailers. But this year, that would be great news because we've had so many, like you said, unemployment, you know, safety concerns, whether you're a shopper or you're working in the store, supply chain were issues there as well. And so I think if retailers can even just hit the mark or get close to it as they did last year, I think that would be very good news. And keep in mind, we're talking probably about $731 billion. Over the Christmas shopping season, which is defined as shopping in November and December.
Mm-hmm. Finally, Audrey, will you be out shopping on Black Friday? I mean, strictly for research purposes, of course.
Well, Kevin, you know I have to because it's my job. And let me just share with you that I have a student group called the Dream Team, and we have a wonderful social media platform called Consumer Sense. We are going to be posting videos and things of what's happening on Black Friday.
Audrey Gusky is an associate professor of marketing at Duquesne University and a consumer trends expert. Thanks so much, Audrey.
Thanks, Kevin. Always great to be with you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. More than 8 months into the coronavirus pandemic, some Pennsylvanians are still unable to access the unemployment benefits they need. 90.5 WESA's Kate Giamarisi reports that around 500,000 residents use an ancillary unemployment program that's been riddled with problems.
Bastian Harris is one of many people who qualify for pandemic unemployment assistance, but they have struggled to get any money. A self-employed editor in Cheswick in Allegheny County, Harris applied for the assistance several months ago when a major project was postponed due to COVID. After initially being approved and receiving payments via paper checks in the mail, Harris then received a U.S. Bank Relia card, but has been unable to access any funds on the debit card. This has left Harris, who uses they-them pronouns, increasingly desperate and stressed.
It kind of leaves me frozen, like, because I don't want to ask to borrow funds from family. I don't want to not pay bills, but I know I have to choose and pick. And so it's kind of like a wait and see because I don't even have an end date.
The Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program has been plagued with problems, advocates say. Why? For one, states had to build a brand new program in a matter of weeks. That's because pandemic unemployment assistance is for workers who are self-employed and so-called gig workers, like Uber drivers. Shortly after the program launched, Pennsylvania was hit by a ring of criminals using stolen identities to get benefits. In June, the state treasurer's office announced it would only pay benefits via debit cards as an anti-fraud measure. That has placed the burden of proof on unemployed workers, says Michelle Evermore, a researcher with the National Unemployment Law Project.
I mean, it's like you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
But it's the card that has been problematic for Harris. Everywhere they have turned has been a dead end. Trying to get through to someone on the phone at Pennsylvania's Department of Labor and Industry hasn't worked. Calling Rely-A-Card hasn't helped either. After an internet search about the problem, Harris also tried uploading a selfie with the photo ID when they read online this was what some people had been required to do.
It's been a major disaster.
Barney Owersler is the director of the Mon Valley Unemployed Committee. He's been helping laid-off workers since the days of the region's mass steel layoffs in the 1980s. Owersler says the system's problems are being compounded by the fact that people like Harris can't reach anyone at the State Department of Labor and Industry to straighten things out.
It's damn near impossible to get through on the phone. And again, if you email uchelp@pa.gov, it's going to tell you that for sure you're not going to hear from them for 2 to 4 weeks. And that's a very optimistic estimate from what I'm hearing and experiencing.
Advocates say bureaucratic problems combined with anti-fraud measures have hurt jobless people who need money now. Eventually, Harris turned to their elected officials. State Senator Lindsey Williams, whose office is trying to assist Harris, says she and other elected officials have been inundated with calls.
It's a huge problem. My office is getting 150 to 175 calls a week on unemployment issues. It's 75 to 80% of the calls we get, and our call volume is probably up 2 times what it was prior to the pandemic.
Even a reporter's efforts to get to the bottom of Harris's case shows how difficult it is to navigate the maze of government agencies and contractors involved. Pennsylvania's Department of Labor and Industry would only answer questions about the anti-fraud measures. The agency referred all questions about the debit cards to the state treasury. The state treasurer's office said Harris's problems should have been resolved through U.S. Bank. After a reporter's inquiry, U.S. Bank said they reached out to Harris directly, and after weeks of trying, they were finally able to access their funds on Tuesday. Advocates believe thousands of other Pennsylvanians are still struggling to get theirs. Kate Gimarisi, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Laura Satsui, Joya Zenkovic, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.